Your infrastructure is version controlled, diffable, and deployable. You can get clone a server config, run a test suite against it, and roll it back in 30 seconds. Your business operations are in a Word document on SharePoint, last updated 2019. Why do you treat your infrastructure better than your business? Five things today. The six-level acceptance testing cascade contracts first at every level, from customer experience to sourcing.
Yeah.
YAML business specifications with CI/CD validation. Business forkability, Git clone a franchise. Why exhaustive specification is mathematically impossible and what that means for your spec design. And why your structured spec becomes queryable operational support for AI at 2 a.m.
I mean, when you put it like that, the SharePoint document sounds a bit embarrassing, doesn't it?
It really does. Welcome to our deep dive into Organizational Schema Theory, or OST. Our mission today is to explore how treating your business operations with the absolute same rigor as your software infrastructure solves, well, basically the ultimate scaling and quality problem.
Yeah, and it's a profound structural shift. We're talking about moving completely away from hope-based management, you know, where you hand someone a PDF and just cross your fingers.
Right.
We're moving to a verifiable architecture.
Because if you're listening to this and you've ever had to execute a deployment, you know the peace of mind a good test suite brings. So to understand how we get there for operations, we need to examine why this gap exists in the first place. Like, why is our server infrastructure virtually bulletproof compared to the incredibly fragile daily operations of the actual business?
Right, so here is the core reality. Organizations are the only complex designed artifacts that lack formal acceptance. Testing a construct independently developed in engineering, medicine, accounting, law, and software. OST identifies this gap.
Wait, say that again. The only complex designed artifact.
Exactly. Think about the physical world for a second. Engineers test bridges via rigorous tolerance inspections, right? Before a single commuter is allowed to drive on them. Doctors test treatments via clinical endpoints before prescribing them.
Oh, sure. And accountants use strict audit criteria before closing the books.
And software engineers use test suites before merging a pull request. In fact, software engineering is cited as the primary evidence of this pattern. Complex systems inherently require tests before implementation.
Yeah.
But in management, nobody formally tests whether an organizational structure actually satisfies its core purpose before deployment. Management just writes an operations manual, conducts a weekend training seminar, and deploys to production.
Wow. It's the literal equivalent of pushing code straight to the main branch without running a single unit test.
Which is why OST introduces the acceptance testing cascade to close this gap. It operates across six distinct levels. Level zero is the customer experience contract. Level one is service delivery. Level two is the process.
Okay.
Level three is the procedure. Level four is the task. And level five is the specific step or sourcing requirement.
Okay, let's slow down and give those levels some room to breathe, because that cascade is basically the foundation of this whole theory,
yeah.
Right? Walk me through a concrete example. Let's say making a cup of specialty coffee.
Sure.
How does a single cup of coffee map across a six-level testing cascade?
The overarching rule is that at each level, you define what success looks like, the acceptance test, before you ever define how to achieve it.
Contracts first.
Contracts first. So level zero is your customer experience contract. For our coffee shop, the test might be the customer receives their drink in under 3 minutes and the coffee hits a very specific acidity profile.
Got it.
Notice we haven't said how we make the coffee yet. We just established the unbreakable promise to the customer.
So level one, service delivery, is the handoff, like how they get it.
Correct. Level one tests the delivery mechanism. Does the barista hand it over at the counter? Or is it a drive-through window?
Yeah.
Then level two is the process. This is the chemistry. The contract here dictates the espresso extraction parameters, say 36 grams of liquid yield in exactly 28 seconds.
And again, we still haven't told the staff what buttons to press. We are just setting the physics of the espresso shot.
That's the boundary line right there. Levels zero through two are contracts. Levels three through five are the implementation.
Okay.
Level three is the procedure. So how to operate the specific La Marzocco espresso machine sitting on the counter. Level four is the task, the specific dial adjustment on the coffee grinder.
Right.
And level five is the sourcing, you know, buying a washed Ethiopian bean from a specific farm. The key here is that the level five bean choice has to mathematically satisfy the level two extraction process, which in turn must satisfy the level zero customer experience.
I mean, I look at this exactly like writing a Terraform plan for the customer's experience. You wouldn't provision an AWS environment without a plan and validation checks. Why on earth would you provision a barista's workflow or like a global supply chain without one?
Well, historically, the excuse was that the tools to functionally test a supply chain algorithmically just didn't exist for non-engineers.
Yeah.
You couldn't, you know, compile a coffee shop.
Yeah, right.
But that excuse is gone. The mechanism exists now. By establishing contracts at the higher levels, the implementation at level 5 is strictly bound. It has to trace all the way back up.
Which brings us to the actual mechanics. Because a theoretical cascade is great, but how does that translate into deployable code? How do we move from a neat management concept into a tangible CI/CD pipeline for a brick-and-mortar business?
We look at the Spectre Coffee demo. It is a complete, fully functioning specialty coffee operation specified in exactly 25 YAML files.
Just 25 files.
Just 25. And we aren't just talking about software configurations for their point-of-sale system. These YAML files explicitly contain the Level 0 customer experience targets, the Level 2 service contracts, the Level 4 process specifications, and the Level 5 sourcing requirements. All of it.
The entire operating model of the business sitting in a Git repository.
Yes. And because it sits in a Git repo with an active validation pipeline, you unlock something unprecedented in operational management. True version control on business decisions. You know exactly who changed a policy, exactly when they changed it, and the stated rationale for why.
So you get diff views on process changes.
You get diff views.
So if you're listening to this and you're used to managing infrastructure, picture this visual in your head. Imagine a terminal window showing two commands side by side. On the left side, a local manager types, git clone franchise main and git checkout, dash B location dash Tokyo and vim overrides.yml.
Yes, love this visual.
They go in and change exactly 6 lines of code. On the right side of the screen, they run, make validate. The terminal returns 25 green checks and 0 failures. And right below both of these panes, there's a diff view showing just those 6 parameter overrides. What you're looking at is the opening of a second location. It's a 6-line diff from the first location, validated by the exact same test suite.
It perfectly captures the operational reality.
Mm-hmm.
This is Terraform for business operations, and it already works.
I need to push back here, though. I want to channel the skepticism of a DevOps engineer listening to this. In software, a failed test physically stops the deployment from reaching the server.
Right, right.
But in a coffee shop, the beans are already sitting in the storeroom. A red X in a terminal doesn't physically stop a human barista from brewing bad coffee. So how does this actually prevent real-world failure?
You're confusing runtime execution with compile-time architecture.
Okay, explain that.
You are absolutely right that a YAML file doesn't slap a barista's hand away from the machine if they make a mistake. But OST isn't trying to solve human error at runtime. It solves systemic management error at design time.
Oh, I see.
So if a Tokyo manager decides they want to switch to a cheaper bean supplier at level 5, they submit that change as a pull request. The CI/CD pipeline runs the validation.
Right.
The pipeline knows that the cheaper bean physically cannot achieve the acidity profile demanded by the level 2 extraction contract. The pipeline flags a failure before the manager is allowed to sign the vendor contract.
That's huge.
Right. It prevents a local manager from deploying a structurally flawed policy to the floor. The test suite fails before the bad coffee is ever purchased, let alone served.
Okay, that makes total sense. It acts as an architectural governor on management decisions, which leads directly into scaling. Because if a new location is quite literally a 6-line code diff, what does this mean for a multi-unit operation or, you know, a global franchise network?
It introduces business forkability. The literal ability to get clone a franchise.
Just clone it.
Literally.
Yeah.
In a traditional legacy business, scaling means handing a franchise a 300-page binder that bundles the required brand outcomes together with highly specific, rigid procedures. The front-end goals and the back-end processes are just hopelessly tangled.
It's a monolithic application architecture. The legacy business model is a monolith.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. Yes. OST breaks the monolith into a microservices architecture.
Hmm.
With business forkability, the parent company only shares the level 0 through level 2 contracts. Those contracts act as the stable API gateways. They define the strict quality standards that are completely non-negotiable.
But the local operators are granted the autonomy to rewrite the level 3 through level 5 procedures.
Yes, exactly like an API. The local branch writes their own back-end implementation to satisfy the API contract. Tokyo might have different water hardness or stricter labor regulations or different supply chain realities than the flagship store in Seattle.
So they adapt.
They adapt the implementation to their local conditions without breaking the brand's service level agreement.
And a crucial piece of those level zero to level two contracts is that they are executor invariant, right?
Right. Executor invariant simply means the contract does not care who or what does the work. The implementation could be executed by a human barista manually tamping the espresso, an automated robotic arm, or an AI agent managing the inventory orders.
It doesn't matter.
The standard defined in the contract must be met, regardless of the executor. The franchisor maintains a library of contract versions, local units pinned to the version they want, and when the parent company discovers an operational improvement, they push it down as a pull request.
And the local operator reviews the PR, tests it against their local backend overrides, and merges it. That is incredibly elegant, but it begs a massive question. If an executive is listening, they might be thinking, this sounds like a lot of work. Setting up YAML specs, CI/CD pipelines, Git repos. Why can't we just hire better technical writers to make our standard operating procedures more detailed? Like, why not just write a better Word document?
Because human language and static documentation fundamentally cannot handle the dimensional complexity of a physical business.
Not even a little.
No. Sure. Trying to write better SOPs to solve operational drift is mathematically doomed. There's a proof for this called the R5 specification impossibility theorem, detailed in the research backing this framework.
Let's unpack the math behind the R5 theorem, because I think this is where the traditional management paradigm completely breaks down.
Yeah, the theorem illustrates that if you map out the operational specification space of a standard business, you are dealing with roughly 48 dimensions. We aren't talking about abstract concepts.
What are they?
These dimensions are real-world variables. Local health code variations, staff turnover rates, ambient humidity affecting the coffee grind, equipment degradation over a 5-year life cycle, seasonal supplier delays.
Every single one of those variables interacts with the others.
Precisely. And when you calculate the permutations of a 48-dimensional space at standard resolution, it yields 10 to the 48th power distinguishable configurations.
10 to the 48th. For context, that is a number so staggeringly massive, it borders on the number of atoms in the Earth.
It is geometrically and mathematically impossible to write exhaustive specifications for a space that massive. You cannot physically write enough step-by-step procedures to cover every possible permutation of humidity, staffing, and equipment failure a business will encounter. So when your traditional SOPs fail in the real world, it is not a failure of management effort. It is not poor writing. It is a mathematical certainty. The space is too large.
So what does that mathematical limit mean for how we actually design our specifications?
It dictates that you must design contracts tests that define what any valid implementation must pass. You cannot rely on procedures that attempt to enumerate every single valid implementation. If you would not document every possible code path, do not try to document every possible operational scenario. You need tests, not procedures.
That is the ultimate aha moment for me. Legacy consulting firms make billions of dollars trying to update these three-ring binders. We've been trying to solve a 10 to the 48th mathematical problem with SharePoint PDFs. No wonder corporate restructurings fail. We're trying to document the ocean. We are frantically trying to write down the coordinate of every drop of water when all we actually need is a functional test to verify if the water is wet.
That is exactly the futility of the legacy model. And if human managers physically cannot map out 10 to the 48th configurations to write these SOPs, who or what actually navigates this operational graph when things go wrong in the real world?
The AI.
This is where writing your business in YAML unlocks its ultimate advantage, native AI integration.
The AI angle is fascinating because right now, every company is desperately trying to bolt AI onto their operations. And the standard playbook is basically just dumping a library of unstructured PDFs into a RAG setup and hoping the custom GPT doesn't hallucinate.
Which is a disaster because unstructured Word documents are inherently ambiguous.
Oh, cool.
A procedural mandate on page 10 of a PDF will silently contradict a safety appendix on page 200, and the LLM has no logical way to resolve the conflict, so it hallucinates a compromise.
Right.
But large language models read YAML natively. When you utilize the OST cascade, your YAML spec isn't just a document. It is a precise, queryable knowledge graph. It explicitly maps the relational logic of what process satisfies what contract.
Let's ground this. Paint me a picture of the 2 a.m. scenario, the dreaded middle-of-the-night crisis where everything is falling apart.
Imagine a local night shift operator is stuck at 2 a.m. The espresso extraction is completely failing, and the machine is throwing an error. In the legacy model, they guess, or they dig through a dusty binder, or they wake up a regional manager who probably doesn't know the answer either.
Sounds familiar.
In the OST model, they simply ask the LLM, what is the acceptable range for extraction temperature at this location to bypass this error?
And because it's traversing a strict graph, the LLM doesn't guess.
The AI instantly traverses the YAML tree. It pulls the exact deterministic parameter from the level 2 contract. It cross-references the level 3 procedure for their specific machine model and checks the level 4 task for the specific bean roast currently in the hopper. It resumes a validated, mathematically sound answer instantly. Your structured spec becomes queryable operational support at 2 a.m. Your Word document is not.
So if you're building an autonomous organization, onboarding an AI operator isn't some massive multi-million-dollar machine learning training project. You don't have to train a neural net on your messy corporate history. You just point the agent to your GitHub repo and say, here are the contracts, read them, and execute.
That is the stark reality of the operational landscape right now. Teams that take the time to build contract-first specifications in 2026 will have seamless, instant AI operational support in 2027. Teams that stubbornly cling to unstructured Word documents have a massive, expensive, and highly error-prone transcription project ahead of them just to reach the starting line. You cannot layer a precision AI agent on top of an ambiguous, contradictory organizational foundation.
We have covered a tremendous amount of ground today. Let's pull it all together. We started by examining the organizational testing gap, the fact that organizations are the only complex structures built without formal acceptance testing, and how the six-level cascade closes that gap by demanding contracts before procedures.
We then walked through the tangible mechanics, deploying 25 YAML specs with CI/CD validation to treat business changes like pull requests. We explored business workability, decoupling the rigid monolith into stable API contracts and flexible local implementations.
And we broke down the staggering math of the R5 theorem, proving that exhaustive SOPs are guaranteed to fail against a 10 to the 48th dimensional reality. You need tests, not documentation. And finally, we saw why structuring your operational data as a queryable graph is the absolute prerequisite for real AI support at 2 a.m.
Right. And for those listening who want to inspect the architecture and see this code in action, the entire framework is open source. You can find the org schema demo on GitHub, which includes the complete Spectre Coffee YAML files available for anyone to fork, read, and adapt to their own operations.
Episode EOST3 covers the quality management side, how this maps to ISO 9001 and continuous certification for compliance professionals. And if the question of AI absorbing organizational coordination structure interests you, Episode 8 covers how AI dissolves the coordination overhead that made large organizations necessary.
It fundamentally rewrites the boundaries of what a firm is.
It really does. And I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. If a business organization is essentially just metadata, a collection of YAML contracts and parameter overrides sitting in a Git repository, what happens when open source communities start doing to business operations what they did to software? What happens when decentralized communities start forking, heavily optimizing, and freely distributing the highly tuned operational templates of billion-dollar legacy companies? Will the future of brick-and-mortar business competition look less like corporate warfare and more like the Linux open source ecosystem? Until next time, keep digging deep.